You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Episode 62, The Paradox.
Welcome to The Paradox with your attending, Dr. Eric Larson. He is a practicing anesthesiologist and clinical assistant professor at Michigan State University College of Human Medicine. Listen in as he takes you behind the scenes of what practicing medicine in today's ever-changing world is like with another doctor. The Paradox is a fun and accidentally informative show for physicians, patients, or anyone who has ever found themselves in a waiting room.
Welcome to The Paradox. I'm your host, Dr. Eric Larson. Thank you for joining me as we discuss the U.S. medical system in a fun and informative format through expert analysis. Today's expert is Joe Kick, a physical therapist in private practice. His practice is called Midline Movement, and I chose to speak to Joe because he doesn't practice physical therapy in the traditional model, one based on third-party payers. It's a very informative discussion and highlights how the payment system affects how we treat our patients. Does it impact our strategies? And does insurance with copays, deductibles, balance billing even save you money as a patient? Well, certainly part of the discussion today, and I think it will help illuminate those sort of aspects of care. I'd like to thank everyone for your understanding and the herky-jerky release dates of the show. Not only have I had an unusually high volume of weekend calls, where I often get things done, but I've been working on my wife's podcast launch, which is incredibly important. Longtime listeners will know about the loss of my son, Andy, who is 14, in August of 2018 in a car crash. I discussed the loss in episodes 19 and 20, and more extensively with an interview with my wife in episode 25. Anyway, we searched for ways of dealing with grief and understanding through podcasts, and searched for podcasts that were on parental grieving, and we didn't find any. And that got my wife thinking, and Marcy decided that that's what she should do, and that's what she needed to do as part of helping patients, helping people, and it's sort of, you know, why we go into medicine. So anyway, it launched this week, and the response was, very much as I predicted, a tremendous response. The podcast is called Losing a Child, Always Andy's Mom. And you can visit the website at andysmom.com. If you know someone dealing with that kind of grief or someone helping someone go through that, I'd encourage you to pass along the show and see if they find some useful help or tools or comfort from the show. Like me, she also closes her show with Andy singing his solo at the Christmas concert of 2017, the Grand Rapids Choir of Men and Boys. Those are things that are linked in every show notes page. But back to housekeeping. The show notes can be found for this show at theparadox.com. That's docs/062. I'd ask that you subscribe to the show if you're not already, and please leave a rating on iTunes or whatever podcast player you like to use. But without further ado, Joe Kick on physical therapy against the grain. Enjoy. Well, thanks so much for joining me, Joe. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Dr. Larson. I appreciate it. Is that okay if I call you Dr. Larson, or do you go?
That's okay. Okay. Well, I always joke that the only people who call me doctor are nurses and medical students. And actually, only half the nurses call me doctor. The other half, who are older than me, which is less than used to be, they usually just call me Eric. But okay. It doesn't bother me either way. So it's pretty interesting talking to you today. I know we've been kind of trying to set this up for some time because I've not had a physical therapist on the show, and there's a lot of I know I have a lot of people who are listeners who are in the, I'll call it the ancillary medical service. So
not physicians, but people who are in the medical, you know, physical therapist, occupational therapist, speech therapist, all the people sort of who provide medical care on some level, but are not the physicians or the nurses, the people like in the hospital.
Yeah.
Although PTs obviously are in the hospitals too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I wanted to talk to you because your story is, I think, unique. At least that's my impression. So why don't you just start with a background of what is a typical outpatient, because you're outpatient physical, what does a typical outpatient physical therapy practice look like?
Okay. And I think that's a good question. And I think as far as my business model, I'm trying to go away from kind of that typical kind of outpatient physical therapy, because I think what you kind of have as most people see as an outpatient therapy is your kind of open gym concept. You've got multiple tables, multiple patients at a time, where you have multiple therapists treating multiple patients as well. So gym equipment, tables, modalities, everything like that, you know, all the good stuff as far as what people are kind of when they look at that in their perspective of PT. So my perspective as physical therapy of what I'm looking to do is keep it individualized, you know, for each patient, right? So my practice, I have a single room with a single bed. I do have other treatment devices and apparatuses as far as home exercise, but mainly for me, it's the table and the patient and really, you know, getting down to what the patient is looking for, first of all, right? What their desires mm-hmm. are, and then essentially why they're there, what their pain is, and really getting and honing in on the diagnosis. And I think that's the biggest thing as far as, like, you know, what people think as traditional therapy and kind of the new direction as far as what I'm trying to take therapy and with, again, to, I would say, a specific population, right? So, you know, post-rehab, I'm not going to really see a lot of post-rehab with surgical intervention. They're going to do more your standard uh-huh. PT, but I'm looking to get into those, you know, that realm of therapy where people are looking for resolution to issues that they've had for a long time.
Sure. So I guess, you know, when I, as someone who's never gone to physical therapy, I know my wife has had physical therapy, but my impression is, you know, since I'm in the OR suite, I'm always imagining people recovering from total knees and things like that. You mentioned rehabilitative services, but what is the typical structure for a physical therapy practice? I mean, I assume that you're, and I want to just go into maybe the economics of it, sort of like, you know, what are the incentives? How do people get paid? How do people make decisions of who they go to? Those sorts of questions, like, you know, what is the referral base? Are they all employed people? Are they independent? You know, that's the sort of questions. And then we'll kind of go into sort of how you're different and how you're looking to kind of change things.
You know, PT typically, you know, most people are going to go and, you know, go to, you know, their primary physician as far as, hey, you know, my shoulders bother me. And then that physician will typically, you know, refer them unless they have somebody that they want to go and see. So you do see a lot of that with a network referral. I think that's with a lot of systems. So, you know, if you, you know, go to a Spectrum doctor, a lot of times they'll refer to a Spectrum based facility for rehab. So, you know, you're seeing that as far as the referral. And then, you know, I've got patients too with direct access. People can come in without going to their doctor first, right? Get a physical therapy evaluation. And then you have 21 days really to complete that therapy regimen until there needs to be a doctor referral after that. So
I guess, when you say direct access, so you're talking about, initially you're talking about someone within a health system,
yep.
and there's, they're oftentimes competing health systems, like in our city, there's certainly competing health systems. And so people try, there are certain physical therapy practices that are within a system. So they're owned by a hospital system or whatever, or medical group. And then people go and they refer, the physicians in that group refer to within their group generally, right? And then other things you're saying, people can just call you up and say, hey, my insurance company allows me to just go to someone? Is that what you mean by direct
access? Good question. So direct access, at least for physical therapy, is that under, you know, the governing bodies of Michigan state law. So it's not really an insurance-based incentive. It's more just the what the practice act allows.
Is it unique to Michigan?
Michigan has, each state has an individual kind of direct access rule. Some allow to utilize physical therapies just as a primary care for whatever they're looking for. In the state of Michigan, essentially, instead of going to the doctor first, you could go and get a therapy evaluation before you to your doctor. You have a 21-day time period after that initial evaluation. And then if they want to continue with treatment further on that, then that's where doctor referral or script, you know, sign-off is going to be merited. But if the patient has a good rapport, possibly has a history of an issue, oftentimes you can send over the evaluation, the doctor will sign off it, and it's pretty smooth sailing. But every now and then you'll get it where, you know, somebody wants their patient to come in so that doctor still kind of is the overseeing.
I see. So this, and you know, I serve on the Regs and Legs Committee, which short for regulation, legislation mm-hmm. for the Michigan State Medical Society. And we talk about these sort of issues with, I guess, scope of practice. It's always a big question, right? Like people try and, well, the state regulatory bodies decide what you can and can't do and what your license allows you to do. And so one of the things, of course, is, you know, can you just say, you know, I threw my back out. Can I just go to a physical therapist and get it fixed? Or do I have to go get permission from my physician and get a prescription? So yours is sounds like, at least in our state, it's kind of some quasi sort of, you have to have the physician sort of approve of it after it's all sort of done, but it has to be within a certain period of time. You can't just start a 6-month therapy without the physician having some idea.
That's exactly.
A physician okay, right?
Yeah, yep, exactly. So if you have somebody who possibly, you know, let's say it's acute ankle sprain, which, you know, you're looking at 4 to 6 weeks full recovery, at least as far as, you know, motion pain. But let's say you can expedite the process. Somebody comes in, you can treat them in 3 weeks and they say, hey, I'm good to go. At that point, you do not need the script sign off. So really do not need any type of doctor's intervention. But yeah, anything beyond that, that's going to be more long term. Typically what I will do with patients is if somebody comes in and I do see a little bit more of a prolonged kind of prognosis as far as what their issue is, whether the chronicity of it's just been there for a long time. So we're assuming it's going to take a little bit longer. That's where I'll write the script, fill it out, have them take it to their doctor, have them sign off, or, you know, I'll fax over the script, have them sign off on it, and then they'll fax it back.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's a regulatory, that is outside of any payment sort of thing, right? This is not like I have $1,000. Hey, Joe, you want to fix something for me? And you're like, well, I can't really treat you for 6 months without having some sort of approval, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of like you can go to certain countries. I think like Mexico's one up. You just go to the pharmacy and just ask for whatever medications you want. In the United States, you have to have a prescription for it unless it's an over-the-counter medication.
You got it.
I mean, that's sort of the
that's a really good
scope of practicings. So your initial, you're talking about going to the physical therapist, and there are these two options, I guess, you know, you're with the network or something. So how is it usually paid for in the, I mean, I imagine most of the people are paid with the traditional way through insurance.
Yeah,
so how's it?
Yeah. So typically most people who go into a therapy practice are going to have, you know, within network, you know, coverage. Some have out of network costs as well. So normally that's a little bit of higher deductible, but you know, most people, if deductible is met, you know, might have a $20 copay, and then the majority of that is probably covered under most plans. So there are some plans that cover visits. There are certain plans that, you know, are covered as far as, you know, do they fall into the in-network deductible? So once you meet your deductible, then a lot of times patients just held the copay. But most of the time that's being, you know, the patient themselves is not seeing the bill. They're paying the copay.
Yeah.
Everything gets billed, insurance covers what they need to, and then whatever's left, either whether it be $0 or $20, that patient pays. And so that's a little bit of that kind of, you know, those hidden fees where people don't really understand the actual cost of what they're going into because most of it's covered.
Sure. Or at least it's not, it's a whole third party payer. There's a third party paying and so you don't really see whether they're reasonable or unreasonable charges, right?
Yeah,
I mean, so that's the craziness that happens in medicine, right? You have, and then you almost have the question of what the rack rate is of something versus what the real rate is, the cost it is to you for you to deliver the care. And well, this with it, and you know, you have separate contracts you sign with different insurance providers. So, you know, your deal with Aetna may be different than with Blue Cross versus United Healthcare versus, you know, whatever insurance company you can think of. So when someone says, well, how much does this cost? You're like, well, depends on who you have a contract with, and so, because you're not contracting directly with the person for most physical, right?
Yeah.
Or it could be a certainly government payer too, which like the Medicare, Medicaid. Totally unrelated maybe, but Medicaid rates, are they generally very, very low compared to Medicare
I mean,
as well?
I would say, Medicaid and Medicare.
So hard to get access if you're someone with Medicaid, right?
I mean,
you have insurance, but no one really wants to take
it.
For sure.
I mean, well, because, I mean, you look at it as far as, hey, this is my charge. You know, how much percentage do I make back? And then two, how much are you paying that person to do the therapy?
Yeah, right.
Whether you're the boss who's or somebody who's managing a therapy clinic. They obviously, the business part, I think, is where people do not see as far as business entities have to survive. They need to have some type of profit in order to be successful and continue to grow and flourish.
To reinvest in your business as well, right?
For
buy
sure.
new equipment. You can't do that if you're not making any extra than what
you're
yes.
going and to so, be. So when you see those, you know, government, you know, insurances, a lot of times the reimbursement is lower. And so, you know, and two, I think, I mean, you see it in a lot of medicine too. You see doctors now that are having to work more because you're seeing more Medicare, Medicaid, the reimbursement's lower. And so, but yeah, I mean, typically those are going to be, reimburse lower. The nice part about opening my practice itself and being an out of network, I do not have any contracts with insurance companies, right?
Okay.
So, my patients pay up front, and then if they do have a reimbursement through their insurer for an out of network cost, and sometimes you kind of, you had asked too about, does the referral constitute the insurance reimbursement? There are certain insurance companies that if you have a referral, they will take my cost, even though it's out of network, and bill it as in network because it's now within the practice.
Okay.
Within the doctor's referral.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that's all those are all the strange sort of agreements that different insurance companies have, right? I mean, it's like, yeah, it's almost unpredictable for what they, what's covered and who's not covered, right?
I mean, agree with that 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the frustrating thing that patients deal with. And, you know, as a provider of care, it's as frustrating for you too, right? Because you're doing what you think is right, and then you have to justify it, or you have to go through, you know, six hoops to take care of something that
definitely
would be a lot simpler if someone just came in and said, hey, I need something done, right? Yeah. Like most services we get, obviously, you don't have to deal with any of this stuff, right? You just, you know, you need your house painted. You have a guy come out and tell you how much it's going to cost to paint your house. And then, you know, your house is painted.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
There's not like four other people you need to ask and say, you go to the painting advisory board and say, hey, is this okay? Or talk to your, you know, citizens insurance about your homeowner's insurance. Can I cover is my painting covered? Right. So you kind of just alluded to that briefly. So we'd say the traditional physical therapy is, I would say, pretty typical to like traditional, any sort of other medicine, right? Like there's most of it is through some sort of carrier of care, either a government payer or a private insurer. We have various rack rates that we charge based on whoever it is. Medicare, Medicaid usually pays a set rate. It doesn't matter who you are, if you're good or bad, you know, slow or fast.
Yes, yeah.
It's all the, you know, the treatment costs this much. If you have to come back for a year, it's what should be able to be fixed in 4 weeks or whatever, right? Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter, right? So you've obviously kind of alluded to the fact that you don't do that. So what do you do? How is your practice different than other practices?
Good question. So, you know, fee for service, you know, some people call it cash-based practice, right? So essentially the kind of definition of that is that, you know, there's kind of an upfront set cost that no matter what service I provide, the cost is kind of straight across the board, right?
Right. So like there's a menu. And
exactly. And really it's kind of therapist, patient driven. You know, I collectively, I mean, I kind of dictate the plan, you know, based off what I think the patient needs. But the nice part is that, you know, if I want to spend X amount of time, you know, and we, you know, we talk units a lot in physical therapy, right? So unit, whether we're going to be, you know, if you use the 8-minute rule with Medicare, you know, 8 minutes.
That's a unit in Medicare?
Well, that, yeah. So eight minutes.
Ours are in anesthesia are 15 minutes.
Gotcha. Okay. So it's typically you think 15, right?
Yeah.
But if you, in Medicare, if you hit that 8-minute mark, you can technically bill a full unit, right?
Oh, okay.
And then the next unit is going to be, it's funny because I don't do Medicare anymore, right? So I used to have to know.
16 or something?
It's like, I want to say it's like 18 and then, 23 minutes, I think you can bill three. I have to look at that again.
And this is why it's right.
Exactly.
And there's no, I mean, someone sat in a committee meeting at some point for probably 3 months and came up with these rules, right?
Exactly. Now I'm going to have to go and look this up again because I'm like, oh. But yeah, so, you know, and that's where therapists will dictate and determine and too. And sometimes, you know, if you get, hey, I get 8 minutes, I get a unit, right? So they're trying to maximize volume, maximize units. Whereas, you know, typically I will treat hour-long treatment sessions unless I feel like it doesn't, you know, it's not merited. If somebody's, you know, doing well, comes in for a follow-up, I might just, you know, reassess some things and send them on their way as long as they feel comfortable with it. So with that, you know, the nice part is too is that, you know, I'm receiving the payment up front, right? So I'm taking that kind of lag time as far as reimbursement out of the equation.
Yeah, right. Which now, is huge.
It is, especially as a provider. Now, as a patient, there is, you know, that can be, you know, a lot. What also too, I think that does for my patients is that most of the people, because a lot of them will go that traditional route. So I'll see people who've gone that traditional route, gone with therapy that's covered under their insurance and essentially has failed. you know,
yeah.
But then go back to the doctor. The doctor really doesn't have an answer. Hey, it's not really surgically merited. You know, we don't really know what's wrong. So I'm just trying to provide another set of eyes, another set of hands, another, you know, essentially avenue that people can hopefully find a way to resolution, you know?
So you're, I've interviewed a number of physicians who are run direct primary care. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
But it's basically like almost a membership based.
Yeah.
Right.
Kind of process. Concierge services.
Yeah. It's like a concierge, that. Except concierge usually suggests that there's insurance involved. Mm. And this is actually just straight membership, like a gym membership.
Gotcha. Okay.
So you just pay $50 a month or $70 a month. And my doc here in town is actually direct primary care now.
Okay.
And so there, the model is different in the sense that the physician is, in some ways, you're just, you don't want to, you're not trying to keep people out of your office, but you are, you're sort of incentivized to have less people. And so you have a better sort of a handle on their care.
Gotcha. Yep.
And also you're maintaining their health, and your hope is that they're not coming a lot. Whereas the traditional medical practice, you are volume-based. Although there's all this talk about quality, but essentially all the money, and as you mentioned with physical therapy, sounds exactly the same, right? It's based on how much time you spend and how many times people come in. It has no bearing on, did you fix me?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that happens a lot most of the time in medicine, but it's not the primary objective. It's certainly not what people are initially paying for.
Yes.
I think the patients, when they arrive, that's obviously their objective. Mm-hmm. But as far as the, as far as all the other the economic financial incentives, they're not, they don't always align for the resolution that the patient comes in for. Right. And so you're just kind of doing, you don't have a membership based, or do you also for that?
I don't. Yeah. You know, that was something I looked into, right. As far as, trying to make it where two people could access. So again, you know, kind of looking at that concierge, but yeah, too, I would say more as what you're talking about, you know, where, it's a direct pay where, hey, the patient comes in, can pay for a membership and can utilize and access it. When I started out, I didn't really know what my success was going to be like. So I kind of just wanted to start and kind of get things rolling. And then it kind of got so congested that I just kind of had to stick with what I had going. And so now when I have more free time, I'm really trying to look at as far as, you know, expanding, trying to make the care optimal. You know, whether it be in the facility with equipment, things like that. But yeah, I think that realm of treatment, medical treatment, you know, same thing with what I'm trying to do with my patients. I mean, I'm trying to give people an idea of what the problem is, give them a better, more clear prognosis, do what I think is appropriate at that point to get them out of there quicker. It's not a, hey, you're weak here. You know, this is bad. So we're going to start with this. And then we're going to, you know, every day is going to be like, we'll see if you're getting better. I would expect some type of change with my patients. And every time that I see my patients, I would expect it to either be a good change, bad change. If I don't see any change at all, then I'm probably not doing the right thing, you know?
So when you're treating people, is your approach different? Cause I assume you initially worked in a sort of, we'll just call it a traditional physical therapy practice, right?
So I never did.
So you always practiced in this sort of model?
I used to work for, Shirley Kleiman here locally.
Okay.
She developed a biomechanical based approach, right? And
okay.
So I worked as a PTA for her for multiple years, and that's where we really got my training as far as too. I kind of outside of the box treatment, right? A lot of people that were coming in, she had the same type of thing out of network practice.
Mm-hmm.
So before I actually had the kind of diagnostic skills, which I was able to acquire in school, because I worked as a PTA for 6 years. So, and I also did a transitional doctorate program. So I went to University of Findlay. And the nice part was I was able to use my updated education and then start to apply it to the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
But I had already had the treatment skills. It was just I was treating the structural element, the alignment issues, things like that, but never really based off like an actual orthopedic diagnosis. So, but the success was really high, right? So, I mean, somebody might have had something orthopedically that maybe was a bulged disc or things like that, right?
Yeah.
But we would just call it, you know, a biomechanical dysfunction with XYZ, and typically correcting that would often resolve the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I did have clinical work though, where I did do,
I was gonna say, you must have been in that environment most of the time you're training, right?
Yeah. For training, for sure. Yeah. So my therapy, I did three different clinicals. One was an inpatient, which was at a skilled nursing. So
mm-hmm, sure.
A very low level, subacute rehab. And then my last two, one was here locally in Grand Rapids. And then I did another one down in Kalamazoo. And so that's, you know, that's where we went to more of, that traditional approach.
Yeah. So without going to specifics about, you know, the practices.
Yeah.
But how are they, how are they different as far as their approach to taking care of patients than, you know, yours right now, would you say?
Well, I would say that the, when you don't really have, you know, how do you kind of word this without, but like sometimes patients really don't have incentive to get better quickly, right? Mm-hmm. Because, hey, you know, I'm going to be here for 8 to 10 treatments, right? So I've got, you know, till treatment 10 to feel better, right? Whereas you can go through and you can look at, you know, hey, you're, you know, this is weak and this is an issue and this and that. And so you look at kind of this broad perspective of people, right? But the key is diagnosis, right? What is driving the issue, right? Now, normally there's probably multiple things, but it's typically finding out what the primary problem is, right? So normally in like your, you know, your traditional therapy practice, there doesn't ever really seem to be that like true, like, hey, this is your problem. It's more like, hey, you've got four things going on, so we're going to work on all four, right? So simultaneously, you have four issues, and we're going to work on all four. Well, typically, though, there's one that is the primary problem.
Sure, yeah.
So my perspective is that that is the one that you want to work on, because that's going to dictate the other three a heck of a lot more than working on all four at the same time.
Do you think that they're more driven by having people show up at multiple visits, and they're not so focused on individualizing care the whole time? I mean, is there incentive? Is there a way they treat during your session that's different than, say, like, you know, your method?
Absolutely. Yeah. So a lot of therapy practices, you know, let's say even an hour visit, right? They'll come in and you'll start out with, you know, whether it's getting warmed up on a bike. And a lot of times that can be done by whether, you know, help with tech. Now, techs are not allowed to do any type of skilled therapy or anything like that. So there is two people kind of ride that line as far as techs doing exercise instruction, stuff like that. But a lot of times too, yeah, so people are doing an exercise program that often really doesn't require much therapy or therapist, you know, skilled eyes for them to do it. So, you know, you're there for half an hour sometimes and your therapist is not even doing anything.
So you're just like riding an exercise bike.
Yeah.
Which you could do at home if you forget
that. Right. So that's the thing, is a lot of things can be done outside of the clinic. And so if I can minimize time in the clinic done with exercises, right, people are going to optimize what the time that's spent with a therapist. And that's it. Where in your traditional practices, that, again, that hour treatment, you might really only spend 15 minutes with that physical therapist. And that might be whether it's they're doing manual work or, you know, different type of exercise instruction. Then a lot of times it's followed up by a modality, whether it be ultrasound or e-stim. So you have an hour. And then two, this is where, and this is why a lot of times it happens is, you know, if you're an hour there and you have, you know, two therics, so that's your unit, right? So therapeutic exercise,
okay.
You know, one manual, so manual therapy, and then, you know, modality, right? So we got four units. Manual therapy, there are different reimbursement costs, right?
Okay.
And typically, you know, functional activity and therapeutic activity reimburse the highest, right? Manual therapy has a lower reimbursement rate. So the incentive from the therapist, or, you know, typically there's a higher up, whether it be corporate based.
Yeah.
Right?
So, well, whoever.
Yeah. Right. So you're trying to, you know, meet numbers and data, you know, the payback on two therapeutic exercise is much higher than the payback on two manual. So there's more incentive to do more therapeutic exercise because the reimbursement is going to be much higher.
And that's like riding a bike.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So you can ride a bike for, 8 minutes and you could bill that as therapeutic exercise. And they would, you know, so it's 8 minutes. Yeah. It's 8 minutes to 22 minutes is one unit.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
And once you go to 23 minutes, then you're in the second unit. So there's kind of this sliding scale, but that's a lot of therapy companies. And even to whether it's a Blue Cross or Priority, a lot of therapists will still use that 8 minute rule. Because it's kind of, you know, if we're going to go to a universal payer system and Medicare is kind of the foundation of that, a lot of therapies will do that. But yeah, I mean, so a lot of times you can spend an hour in a general therapy practice and spend really 15 minutes with the physical therapist.
Okay. So, and that sounds very similar to your medical practice. I mean, like you go to primary care practice and most of your time is spent not actually talking to the physician and getting any diagnostic work or treatment. It's spent with gathering, you know, information and weight and whatever. So in a lot of problems with medicine are data entry, electronic health records. Is that a problem for physical therapy as well? Like a lot of times, I don't see that. I don't get the impression there's a lot of that.
So. Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of stuff still is done, like, you know, with, you know, I use an EMR for all my medical records, everything like that. I mean, me being in a single entity right now, you know, there's, you know, I don't have anybody who does my data entry.
Did you feel, or did people talk about when you're training, there are lots of back office staff who have to do all the billing and stuff like that. So like for most medical practices, they always say about 10 people in the back office for each physician. What is it?
With PT, you know, if you're, you'll typically have billing specialists, right? You know, secretary to that. So some people have a higher billing specialist that will do the billing, all the, you know, all the coding, everything like that. You know, spending time on the phone with the insurance companies. Right.
Collecting,
trying,
all that kind of
stuff. Trying to figure out when the pay is going to come, whether it's approved or, you know, pre-approved. And so with PT and taking, again, now taking the insurer out of it, right? You know, I still code. I do everything as far as like ICD-10 codes, my therapy diagnosis codes. But because I don't get reimbursement based off that insurance incentive, right? I don't need somebody to send that to the insurance company to make sure that there's reimbursement.
So why do you code then if you don't?
Because if somebody wants to submit, the insurance is
going to. Oh, I see.
That. Yeah.
So it's sort of like the Mayo is like that, right? Like they don't actually contract with Medicare, but you can get just care there and then you submit the bill to Medicare and they pay the bill.
Exactly.
But so they give you the codes and whatever.
For sure.
So it's just a service you provide to the patients. If they have insurance, they can then try and submit it and see if they get any money back.
Definitely. So it does, I mean, then now it becomes on the patient a little bit, you know, so for some people that might be a little bit of a, you know, a turnoff as far as, hey, well, this is going to make a little bit more legwork for me. But often just submitting it to an insurer is pretty simple. And so sometimes they might have other questions that, you know, I've had, you know, calls from almost all the insurance companies as far as to just making sure I'm an actual business entity, a healthcare provider, you know? So, typically I'll get that and then I just have to give them information as far as, you know, tax and things like that. So just making sure I have, you know, an appropriate tax ID and an NPI number, everything like that.
Do you find most people are coming to you without expectation they're not going to get reimbursed from the insurance anyway? And so anything they get is sort of like gravy.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, there are some people that just don't really care. I know they have insurance and say, I don't really care. But I always suggest that, hey, you know, submit that for insurance. You never know. You might get 20% back, 50% back. It's worth a shot. So, but I think most people probably are more on the lines of, you know, at this point, I don't really care.
And you made an interesting point on your website when I was reading earlier that you know, you might see you, and I don't know how much you charge. Probably depends on the diagnosis, what you think you have to do, but maybe it's a couple $100 or something. And then it's expensive upfront cost, but if you go to the traditional physical therapist covered by insurance, nothing's covered really usually 100%. I mean, there are ones, but you know, first you have to meet your deductible. So if you haven't met your deductible, you're paying whatever they cost, and you have to if it's costing you more as far as treatment visits and things like that. That's going to come out of your pocket, and Absolutely. That maybe may end up being more than your initial upfront charge. But also you have co-pays and, you know, balance billing, all these other sort of things that can sort of catch people that may not expect it, right?
Yeah. Well, and again, too, there's always that lag time, too, as far as, I mean, you know, you go to the hospital, you know, you don't receive your anesthesiology bill until, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, which is not necessarily your fault, but then it has to go through the processing for the insurer, making sure that you guys are getting paid. And so, and that's what I think people don't understand is that you go into a traditional therapy practice and you still might be paying $450 for that evaluation for all the billing and the coding and that hour long session. Whereas, you know,
and you won't know, right? You don't know until it comes back. And then you might also suddenly say that, well, you're not going to pay any of that. Right. I mean, Definitely. You don't ever know that.
And so too, you know, if it bounces back too, and let's say, hey, your deductible is $6,500, right?
Yeah.
And next thing you know, you've got a $450 therapy bill that came out, you know, that comes to you four weeks, 6 weeks later, and then you're already in, and then you're thinking, well, I've already done 8 treatment sessions, right?
You know, so $450 plus all those, right?
Yes,
so you're saying,
right.
Yeah.
Now, granted, essentially you're working towards a deductible, which, you know, if you have other, you know, medical bills or expenses, right, essentially you'll meet that. But it's still, I mean, it can be a lot of out-of-pocket costs that you just end up paying, and maybe that you are relatively healthy except for a therapy issue, but it costs you $6,500 and going to a more traditional, you know, therapy that you had to go for 20 visits.
Right. And, I think there was a time, certainly when I started working in 2004, in a private practice here, that it was not hard for people to meet the deductible. And I think people oftentimes did because the deductibles are like $1,000-$2,000. And so the average person is going to probably meet that deductible through the year. And so then it's not a big deal. You're expecting to spend that much, but now your deductible is maybe $6,000, $7,000, $10,000, especially for a family of four.
Yeah.
And now it makes a big difference if you're, because you're probably not going to meet the deductible. Absolutely. And get that. And if you, and you, and it's not a goal to meet it because it costs you so much to get to the point where now we're paying 80%, and then you're still on the hook for 20%.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yes. And so I think too, with you're seeing these higher deductibles. And so, and being relatively new as far as like understanding, you know, reimbursement and deductibles and everything that comes into, healthcare, because before I was just providing, right? So I never really cared as much about
your worker bee.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. And so, so now, you know, now it's looking at the scheme of it and going, you know, and then too, now having a family, right.
Mm-hmm.
And just having a child and paying for, you know, independent private insurance, you know, wasn't a cheap thing to do.
No,
you know,
it's small business owner. Yeah, that's
for sure.
Yeah.
And so, you know, yes, our deductible is met, but you know, we have other costs, and I think we have a 20% pay now at this point, mm-hmm. you know, so we still have to pay. So even though the deductible is met, I mean, there's still some
right.
money that comes out.
Yeah. You know? No, I talked about one of my previous episodes where I got a bill for $5,000 for something that was, they were charging $250 cash if I did it ahead of time, but I
wow.
just had to submit to insurance. Not a unique story.
I mean,
and then my big fear is that what do they say? They accept it. And now I have to 20% of $5,000. I still have $1,000
yeah.
something that I could have gotten for $250. So I think this is a really good example of, the fact that now the deductibles are so high, co-payments, you know, co-pays and things, it seems like it's a good opportunity for someone. I mean, for people to, there's now room for you to be in the market and look affordable, even though you're charging. What 10 years ago probably wouldn't, or 15 years ago would certainly have, people are like, there's no way I pay $400 because I pay, you know, $5 to go to these yeah. co-pays. And now they're like, oh, this is actually probably a good deal.
Yeah. And I think too, because a lot of the people I am seeing have either, like I said, either, you know, really kind of chronic issues that they've been dealing with, or somebody who's been to multiple providers and really has no good answer. You know, I just treated actually a physician and a runner, mm-hmm. you know,
not me, by the way.
No. Yeah.
I don't run.
And, so he's a marathoner, have been dealing with just a really stubborn case of plantar fasciitis, was very traditional plantar fasciitis as mm-hmm. far as its symptoms. Well, the persistency of it was a little bit of the odd part. And then, you know, went through, you know, had a cortisone injection, everything like that. It yeah. helped. You know, he's like, you know, I don't want to say this, but one of my, you know, fellow providers gave me a cortisone, and I'm like, hey, you know, anything that helps.
Yeah.
And you know, he had gone to therapy as well, right? Went to, actually, I think I want to say an out of network provider, but, or I shouldn't say out of network provider, an in network provider, but a private entity. Right.
Sure.
So,
okay.
So it was covered, and just felt like he said, you know, he was like, I was on the bike, I was doing things like that. And we came in, I mean, he had some structural issues in his foot. We fixed those, and I told him to go out and run, you
yeah.
know, and there, but that was the thing, is that, he, you know, he, at that point, he was just looking for the help. I mean, you're looking for somebody who's looking for maybe something that's missing.
Yeah.
And so, that's where I think that, you know, one or two visits often to come in, or three or four visits to come in and really just look at the issue as far as, you know, a different set of eyes on it, and giving people something that somebody is missing. And oftentimes that's the thing, is that there's, you know, again, there's three or four things, but are you hitting the right thing?
Yeah.
You know,
and the market for physical therapists now, do you feel like it's moving? Is it moving in any sort of direction? Do you feel like what your model of sort of the cash pay upfront, we're just going to treat the problem, and we're not going to have, you know, we're not going to treat it like it's been traditionally treated.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you find that that's growing? Do you think there's a movement towards this, or do you think you're just an outlier and a kind of weirdo in town?
Yeah. I think medicine in general is going that way. I mean, I think mm-hmm. most of the smart people, as far as that go, you know, it just, again, that business model. But I think too, that people in general sometimes, and I think, are kind of getting fed up with some of that, you know, that, hey, yeah, this is what my insurance provides, but is it the best, you know, mm-hmm. care that I can get? So, I would say that it's kind of progressing slowly. I think it depends on the market too,
yeah.
right? I mean, I think Grand Rapids, as far as the economy and the way it's growing, this market for me is fantastic. I mean, when I
was, you said you're too busy.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, you look at just the surrounding area, and just the growth is tremendous. And so, when I was in school, a lot of the therapists, because I went to school in Ohio and mm-hmm. at University of Findlay, and they talked about how, I mean, some of them actually had private practices, but when certain laws, you know, came into play in the 90s and the 2000s, where pay was taken away from private practices and went more into the systems, a lot of those failed. And so in towns that couldn't sustain that, right? Mm-hmm. So you're seeing some of those like super payments, lump payments, where people are setting up incentive plans where basically, hey, we're gonna give you X amount of money for your patient for this amount of time.
Oh, okay. Right?
And so a lot of hospital systems were negotiating with insurance companies, and so then now you're taking away from some of those smaller entities.
I see.
Yeah. So some, you know, more into even like private practice, whether it be like a home healthcare, right?
Yeah.
So home physical therapy, you know, whether it be for geriatric population or people who just can't get out of the house. But yeah, I think that our market definitely had it. And that's why I think for me, I went that direction. But I was in school, there were about 36 people in my program. And I would say probably most of them probably thought I was a little bit crazy. And so,
so yeah. You're an outlier still.
Oh, for sure. You know, I mean, but I think in Grand Rapids, there's a market to have multiple. There are other, you know, a couple other professionals here,
sure,
you know,
yeah.
Physical therapists who do that.
Do you feel that's a generational thing? Do you think it's do you think most people go into physical therapy aren't entrepreneurial and willing to take the risk, or do you think it's because, you know, at some point, if there's enough supply, people are going to, or enough demand, I should say, then
yeah.
People will supply whatever it is they think they see. But
yeah.
Do you think it's just, I've always wondered if it's sort of like we always have this talk now in medicine that people are going in with the expectation they'll be employed and they're not going to go into private practice and go on, you know, hang a shingle start practicing because there's so much risk involved.
Absolutely.
And it's hard, you know, without the infrastructure with the HRs or whatever,
yes.
You know, to try and afford all this stuff. And then you've got your debt, which I'm sure you have debt, not medical school debt, but still significant, I'm sure, at times.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you think it's a generation? I mean, what do you think the reason for that is? Or do you think it's shifting? Do you think what's your impression nationally or sort of like trade journals and whatever?
I think that's a great question. So during some of my clinicals, I worked with multiple therapists who were younger than me. So I'll be 36 this week. So I'm your non-traditional, right? So I went to a transition program. So as far as most therapists being done with school, you know, at 26 years old.
Yeah, right, sure.
And so I think I just had a different perspective as far as, okay, I'm a little bit older, I'm a little bit more mature, I've seen the field, so I have more direction with it. But when I was in my last clinical, there were two therapists that I work with, and they were very persistent at telling me that if I thought I wanted to make a lot of money, I went into the wrong field,
right?
You know, and they were like, you know, trust us. And I was like, well, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily the incentive I went into this for,
right.
But I do think as far as being successful in a private practice, like the business is there, but you have to be offering something different, right?
Mm-hmm.
If people don't offer something that's different from the standard product, then I think that's where you kind of lose out, right? So then that's where too, I do think there is that kind of that risk of the younger generation. Although I feel like the younger generation, there is that entrepreneurial, like, hey, start your own business, do this. There is a lot of that. But with the PT field, I do think it is more so like, hey, get a job, work for a company, because then they'll feed you patients and then you have nothing to worry about.
Sure. And you have benefits. You'll have all the sorts of,
yeah.
All that stuff that is to your benefit oftentimes,
yep.
But it does come with a price. I mean, I think that's always a trade-off with everything, but do you think that, do you see that? I mean, you see this growing. I mean, you're obviously too busy,
yeah,
right? I mean,
yeah.
Already.
Yes.
You looking to expand and try and bring more people? So
yeah. So I mean, that would be my next step is a larger, just, you know, building structure,
bigger space, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And so, and then, you know, obviously hiring another clinician, and that becomes a tricky thing because too, you know, as it being cash based, right? You need to offer, you know, that variable that's different than traditional therapy,
either right? You basically, and this is what, you know, medical partnerships is what they did, right? You buy into the partner yep. on some level, you pay and at least overhead or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then you have to, I suppose in your instance, you'd have to have it philosophically, you have to have someone who's going to practice in generally the same sort of manner.
Agreed. And there, you know, I'd love to have somebody who maybe has a unique skill set different from mine that can bring it to the practice that's already established, right? You know, and whether it be a specialty, you know, working with the chronic migraine patients or different things like that, right? Because, you know, those are always tough cases, right? You know, because there's so many variables that come into play. But, you know, some people are a little bit more versed in kind of all the avenues of that. I mean, do I see patients like that? Yes. But, you know, those are always more complex because there are a lot of variables.
Yeah.
It's way easier to fix a knee that's just structural.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
So yeah, I think as far as expansion of the practice, it's hiring someone who fits the mold, right? Fits the concept. It'd be nice if I could custom shape somebody, right? But that's also too, would come with either of them being willing to kind of go as far as like a, you know, just shadowing for a while, taking lesser pay,
you
know, and going from there. But yeah, so that's the next step as far as business. But I do think there still is that people are comfortable, right? Mm-hmm. And that there is that risk. And I think for me, my wife is a business owner. She's been a business owner. She's that kind of genuine entrepreneur, right?
Yeah.
Every day I come home, she's got something new going on, right? Uh-huh. And so when I kind of questioned whether I wanted to do this right away, she was really adamant about, you know, start it now because you're going to be nervous no matter what, right? You mm-hmm. got to take that leap. And so once I took the leap, or no, then it was, you know, things kind of started out. And I think I was open. Actually, the second week I was open, I think, was the week that we had that huge snowstorm, right? And nobody really went anywhere. And then I think the next week we had all the ice. And then it was like another ice storm. Yeah. And so I had a lot of time to, like I said,
a lot of solitaire.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I did have some patience. I actually had some that came in during that, but just starting out and just getting it going, I think was the best thing I could do, because I do think it's with anything. I mean, you're going to have to jump, right?
Yeah.
And you might hit the ground really hard, right? But if you can get back up and kind of learn from what you're doing, I think that's the biggest thing, is that I knew if I didn't start it, I wasn't going to learn how I was going to do it. And so I think that's sometimes a fear issue, you know, especially too when you get out of school with a lot of debt.
Sure, right? So there's a lot of pressure on you, right? Yeah. You got to provide your family and make sure you eat.
And 2 years, you know, even too, you say like, not my school. I went to Hope for my undergrad, mm-hmm. and then I went back and did my.
That's PTA. A private school for those you don't know.
Yeah, and so I did. I came out with kind of minimal debt, but then doing the distance program. That I was in, and Findlay, University of Findlay is a private institute as well. So mm-hmm. it was a pretty high tuition cost. And so I have a decent amount of debt. But I also think if I wasn't doing what I'm doing, that would be a lot more stressful.
Yeah.
Because then I would probably be taking a lot of my income and putting it towards my student loans and really, you know, kind yeah. of minimizing what I would have as far as, you know, mm-hmm. extra funds. But right now it's been fantastic. Things have gone well. And so I have a great patient load, and I've been able to manage it well.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I talk to other entrepreneurs, physicians, it's the same sort of story, right? It's like, you know, you try and plan, you have an idea of what it's going to be like, and then you just have to, at some point, make the decision you're just going to do it, and then kind of just go on the fly and just as things evolve and you learn how to actually practice, however it is,
yeah,
you just have to learn how to market and all those things, and network and find patients. Do you have a big back office, or do you?
Not at all. It's me.
Just you.
Yeah, so, just me, I mean, right now.
And so
yeah.
that provides a tremendous efficiency for you, right? I mean, that's why I talk with these EPC docs, the same thing, like, well, one person or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So right now, too, that would be, I would think, you know, before, and I, it's like every week I say I need to get somebody to do things, and it's just, you know, yeah. it's paper, you know, I'm inputting, you know, data information. I do all my billing as far as making sure my charges are up to date. And then to, like, you know, sending emails out, and then also, you know, answering calls back and responding to patients. And so trying to stay up on that. I mean, I try to be as efficient as possible. I mean, it pushes me, because too, a lot of times when I have a busy day, I need to find that time in the day to return phone calls and make sure to communicate with people effectively. And so there's some days where I'm definitely overwhelmed. And so having somebody to help me would at least take some of that, you know, back office stuff off of my table. Which would make my practice better, as far as, like, then I could just worry about my patients. Which, when I'm with my patients, you know, that's the other thing too, is you know, I might jot some things down, but I do have a pretty good memory as far as whether it's treatment, diagnosis, stuff like that, or kind of what I had for, you know, positive findings. Mm-hmm. And so, but I don't sit there and document with my patients. You know, that's another thing too, is like that hour that I'm with my patients, you know, I'm with my patient.
Oh, and you're with them the whole hour, right? It's a lot easier to remember something than if you're with someone for 8-9 minutes.
For sure. And so, you know, I think that being, you know, spending that much time too, and really, like you said too, even with your doctor, right? You might be there for an hour, but you maybe spend 15 minutes with your doctor. And mm-hmm. so even too, your doctor has a limited time to kind of really get a good idea, because he's trying to get a Q&A in a short period. And sometimes you're forgetting things. And so, you know, sometimes you pick other things up, spending a little bit more time with people as far as, like, you know, hey, you know, is there something that possibly you're doing to help, you know, facilitate the issue to be worse on a regular basis, and this and that. So I think too, but I do, that's why I think it's important for, you know, patient outcomes, is that I do think when you have, you know, your skilled therapist, right, and maybe not just a tech with you the majority of your time, you can use that time to reflect upon, you know, what it is that, you know, they're struggling with, they're dealing with, and trying to find some resolution to that problems. And a lot of times lifestyle modification or just changes in how you're doing everyday activity can make a tremendous difference. And I think that's where spending a little bit more time with your patient and getting a good idea of their limitations really is going to, you know, show more of a long-term outcome.
Sure. And And I always feel like if you're going to spend a couple hundred dollars, you want to spend it with someone who's worth a couple hundred dollars rather than spending on an exercise bike. Yeah, right? I mean,
definitely.
And that's the same thing with a physician. Like if you're going to go see someone, you actually want to see the physician. You actually want to have someone who's an expert who's going to be able to fix whatever it is or give you an idea. You don't want to spend a bunch of money and not actually ever see anybody.
And you know, I've had failed cases too. And you know, I think there are a lot of therapists. Some therapists don't like to refer to mm-hmm. doctors because, you know, hey, your surgeon does this. But you know, with people who sometimes have things they're struggling with, I will bring a medical specialist in to help intervene. You know, whether it be say, hey, you know, I'm not sending you there because you need to have surgery, but at least we get a perspective of what's going on internally. But they might be able to offer something, whether it be pain management with cortisone shot,
sure,
you know, something like that. I mean, and people are tremendously thankful when you send them in the right direction, right? It's not always going to be the best as far as their patient return because they might have having surgery and you know, I would say, you know, the blame's not really on you by any means, but some people might take it that way. But, you know, I think when you send people in the right direction and people find and they end up on the good end of a surgical outcome, they're very thankful that you did it.
Look, you can't fix everything with physical therapy. You can't fix everything with surgery. There's always some combination between. Some things are, you know, 50-50, which you want to try first.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it only makes sense that there's some things that are going to work and some aren't, and you can't expect to always, whatever your specialty is, you can't fix every problem. Whatever you do.
Which so. Coming in as a young therapist at first, that was always my biggest challenge.
Right. You know, sure. No. And I think, you know, in training as a physician and your specialty training, the most important skill to have, I mean, aside from being somebody who shows up in time and all the usual sort of things, right, is recognizing when you don't know and when to ask questions and to accept the fact that you may not be able to fix whatever it is and didn't seek help, right? Sure. I mean, the biggest thing is just saying, I don't know, and I'll find out or help you get the answer. But
I think too, you know, too, being in a more specialty clinic, I'm trying to diversify my skill set as much as possible all the time, right?
You're all by yourself.
Yeah. And so, you know, I might offer some unique things, but too, having, you know, a vast variety of skill sets and being able to offer multiple different ways to fix something, I think too, maximizes outcomes, right? So often too, you'll get a therapist who has a strict way of treating and kind of sticks to that traditionally. And I think too, but if you have a little bit of piece of everything and you can, again, to select the best thing at the time mm-hmm. and see that good outcome. And so, yeah, I mean, in the overall kind of that private practice world for me right now is optimizing that hour that the patient feels like what they're paying for is worth it because they're getting better.
Yeah.
You know, and I think sometimes it's when you go into the more traditional, it's hard to tell if you're getting ready or getting better initially because of the fact that, you know, hey, your plan of care is for 10 visits. And so we don't really necessarily need you better for 10 visits. We've got you scheduled out.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, then it kind of draws out the process.
Right. Well, yeah. And like you said, I think it's important, probably especially as a small business owner, entrepreneur, whatever, that you're not rigid, right? And that you have some flexibility, and that's important. Well, that's probably a good way to end the show.
Yeah.
What's a good way for people to find out what you're up to?
Good question. So, website www.midlinemovement. So, midline, just like one word, and then movement.com is the website. And so all the information as far as phone, email is on that website. So gives to a little bit kind of a general overview of the clinic itself. Right. So, you know, I made the page just for kind of an informative page, but I think too, with everybody getting into the clinic and seeing if the treatment's right for you is always the best thing. And for the most part, I feel like there's something I can offer everybody at this point.
You firebrand on Twitter or Facebook or something like that?
You know what? I have a Facebook too as well.
But that's just a personal page?
Yeah. Well, and I do have a business page. Yeah. So I'm not a tweeter or a Twitter person.
Yeah. I don't know what's Snapchat.
Yeah. Just the basic stuff right now. try to minimize it, you know, because then too, I have to keep those up to date.
Perfect. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again. It was nice talking to you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Eric.
Thanks for listening to The Paradox. If you like what the doc is doing, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. And share the show with your friends. Become a supporting listener to get access to special bonuses at patreon.com/theparadox. Show notes can be found at theparadox.com.